Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Monday, November 6th, 2023. Thank you for tuning in to WVW-TV and the Eastman Financial Report. We appreciate your viewership, and we're very thankful that we're able to offer you some excellent content at virtually no cost. We are not a paid subscription, and we're not a paywall. We basically are 24/7 bringing you viewpoints and opinions that you're not going to find in the mainstream media, but are very, very important in the marketplace of ideas. And for that, we're very thankful, not only for your viewership, but also for your generous support. And you can continue to support our efforts here by going to the foundation. If you'd like, make a donation. It always helps. We're also, as you know, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell advertising, and therefore our editorial comment is not controlled by advertisers. We do have sponsors that sponsor some of the programming, and we're thankful for those sponsors because, again, they keep this information flowing to you free of charge 24 hours a day, whether it's live or whether it's pre-recorded. There's certainly a great deal of information that broadens the marketplace of ideas. The sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading, of course, and if you've been paying attention to my program at all, you'll know that it's a fine company based out of Arizona, and they make a market in precious metals, tangible precious metals. Basically, they sell gold and silver and platinum and other bullion products. What you see on the screen here are bullion coins, and those are coins that are minted by governments around the world. You are looking at the American version. It's minted by the U.S. Mint, and they are guaranteed by that mint as to quality and quantity of gold or silver or platinum. It's a very easy way for people to buy gold and silver and platinum in bullion form, knowing that the piece of bullion is minted by a government rather than a refiner. If you are interested in refined gold and silver products, you can certainly buy those from Swiss America as well. They deal with excellent refiners that have been in business for literally centuries, and their job is to take the raw gold and silver and refine out all the imperfections and come up with a piece of metal at a certain size and a certain content of gold and silver. So you can rest assured when you deal with a company like Swiss America that you're getting a fine bullion product as well. They also have numismatic coins, which are coin collector coins. And those are interesting from a tax perspective because they contain gold and silver. They're not minted to be an ounce of gold or a half an ounce of gold. They were actually minted back in the day based upon a ratio of gold to dollars, and that has been historically encapsulated in numismatic coins. There's a little bit different tax treatment for the numismatic coins, coin collectible coins, and so you might want to give them a call, Swiss America, at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them for some free information about that sector and precious metals in general. They're happy to send it out. There's no obligation. They're happy to mail you free information. You can also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And if you use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they will know that you saw this information here, and they will be happy to send you free information. They're also running a really great special right now on Liberty Standing Half Dollars in silver. These are bullion coins made by the federal government, and the idea is that if you buy this half dollar coin, it is going to be very pure and guaranteed quantity of silver. And they're collector items, and of course, this is a way to diversify your financial holdings into tangible metals. And this is a great way to hold it because those coins are made by the U.S. government. So if you're interested in that, they have a great special right now, which is $13.50 per coin. There's a maximum of 250 coins per person. And the $13.50 expires when they sell out because this is based on their current inventory. And the neat thing about it is that it's free shipping. And if you buy things online or perhaps sell things online, you know that shipping becomes a really big issue. And you, as you can imagine, precious metals are heavy. So if you can get $13.50 for a silver half dollar and free shipping, that is something to look into. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to SwissAmerica.com. And be sure to use the promo code Eastman so they know you've heard it here. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you. And these are great, you know, gifts to be giving during the holidays and stocking stuffers. There's nothing finer than giving a dearly loved person, friend, family member the gift of precious metals. You know, it was if you go back 2,000 years, the wise men brought baby Jesus, you know, precious metals, gold, right? It works as well today. So if you're interested in looking for a great idea, a gift idea that's a little bit different, but certainly precious, this is a great opportunity, especially at $13.50 plus including shipping. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271 or SwissAmerica.com. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you and take advantage of this opportunity. Okay, let's dive into the news today. This is going to be a slow news week because all the big news happened last week with the Federal Open Market Committee keeping the interest rates steady. So we're going to talk about other information that's in the financial news. One thing I want to talk about is that court decision that came out last week with respect to real estate commissions. This is a big thing, and I suspect that it's going to be transitional in the real estate industry. And I want to talk about that. If you remember, a group of people, home sellers, sued the National Association of Realtors and others, alleging that they are conspiring to fix the price of real estate commissions and how real estate commissions are paid in the United States. And this is, and I had mentioned last week that this is a raging battle. It's been raging. I remember back in the 1970s when I was first starting my career as a real estate analyst before I went off to law school. And that was a big deal because there was this idea that the real estate commissions were always 6%. And they thought, well, that's sort of odd because you're not supposed to conspire with people in your industry to fix prices. And that that legislation happened, actually started with President Teddy Roosevelt back in the early 1900s with this idea of the antitrust movement. Because back in the late 1800s, the 1890s, the gay 90s, as they call them, it was boom times in America, and there was no federal income tax. So boy, every dollar you made was your dollar to keep, and you didn't have to ship off half of it to state, federal, local, whatever. So the point was, there were clever minds, and I think the John D. Rockefeller and others, of course, were somehow alleged to be conspiring to fix prices and extract more profit from the economy than a free market would allow. You know, allow me to diverge briefly into economic theory. If you think back to the Adam Smith supply and demand, there's a supply of goods and there's a demand for goods and there's an equilibrium, and as a certain quantity, there'll be a certain price. And that's a free market or a clearing market price for goods. Well, if you can control the supply and you can control pricing and demand is constant, then that becomes a monopoly power. If you're the only person in that industry and you're the only person selling into that market, you're going to raise your prices very high. And depending upon the elasticity of demand, which means the ability of people to find something else as a substitute, if it's inelastic, if the demand can't shift away if prices rise and you're the only player in the market, a monopoly, you're going to raise the prices pretty close to infinity, and people will have to pay. Like if you had a monopoly on selling food in America, wow, you could jack the prices of food up to the moon. People have to buy food or they'll starve to death. Same thing with gasoline. And that's where the John D. Rockefeller thing came in. You know, people really were getting into the gasoline, you know, driving personal cars. And he was kind of controlling, you know, basically from the oil well to the refinery to the gas stations. And that whole thing was busted up during the antitrust and the trust busters. And as a result of that, what American policy has been since the very early 1900s was that we want to see free, competitive, fair markets where there's lots of market sellers and lots of buyers. And then you'll get to that Adam Smith X where you will have supply is, you know, robust and demand is, of course, we want that to be robust. And then there will be a market price based on quantity. And this problem of monopoly has always been a big thing. And of course, the legislation was passed, and then the trust busters came from the Justice Department and the federal government. And you know, there have been all sorts of litigation and prosecutions of people that are fixing prices to try and extract monopoly profits out of what should be a clearing free market. And anybody who has monopoly power or market power and has the ability to increase the margins because they can control the supply is suspect. And this, of course, led to the entire idea of regulating utilities, which is something I have some experience as a former utilities regulator. The whole idea was when electricity was becoming a thing, there were competing electric companies. You had Tesla's idea of AC current, and Edison was DC current, and then anybody with a generator could open an electric company and run wires all over town. You had three or four different electric companies with wires all over the place. So the idea was, okay, let's just have one supplier of electricity. And then the question is, well, you know, you have a monopoly supplier, they can charge $1 zillion and all the customers are stuck because who doesn't want electricity, especially in this day and age? So what we did was we granted them a monopoly and conditioned it on an obligation to serve the monopoly region, but then we're going to regulate your prices to control your return on equity. Okay, that's how much profit there is minus your shares outstanding. That's your return on equity. Okay, and that's what utility regulation's been about. The granting of a monopoly with a regulatory hammer that's supposed to keep electric companies from becoming vastly wealthy. And they know, and you know, for decades and decades and decades, this regulatory model has worked for better or worse in the utilities space to keep monopoly power from happening. And then, of course, the idea is there is no free market for the purchase of electricity, so the government is going to force it. And of course, you know, don't feel bad for the utilities as overly regulated, because their rate of return tends to be about 10.5-11% return on equity. And, you know, utility stocks are very good stocks for some people to own, and utility bonds, you know, now utilities have gone broke, especially the ones that got caught up in the nuclear, trying to build nuclear plants, which were politically disastrous and very expensive. Utilities have, in fact, gone broke. But the reality is, if you look at the vast majority of utilities, all they basically do is they set their prices based upon a return on equity, and that's what the regulators watch, and that's how it goes. So other than that, there are no monopolies operating in the United States, except perhaps for the healthcare business, but there simply aren't enough hours in the day to talk about that. So the public interest point is monopolies are bad, because the people in the marketplace, the buyers, and in this case with real estate, the sellers, are paying more for the service than they have to, and there's a monopoly mechanism at work. Now, in this lawsuit, I've done a little bit of reading over this the weekend. The idea was, because the National Association of Realtors is basically functions as the multiple listing service, that's the platform upon which, if you list your home for sale, you want to get it on MLS, multiple listing service, and that puts it out into the world, and you know, you got the price and a picture and all the, you know, all the attributes of your home and how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms. It's basically the online listing. And of course, buyers will look at the multiple listing service, but in order to see that, it's not just like public, like other real estate platforms. It's you have to go with a buying broker and a selling broker, and this gets rather esoteric. But when you sell your house, you hire an agent, and that agent is a broker or broker's agent, and there's an agency relationship where they are the professionals, and they will market your home and stage it and take pictures and talk it all up, and you know, they'll schedule everything. Thing. They'll do that for a fee, and that's the 6% commission, or maybe it's 5%, whatever they negotiate. And then on the other side is the buyers. And the vast majority of Americans are not lawyers, thank goodness, and they're not experts in real estate. They just want to buy a home so that they can live in there. So you have buyer agents that work with buyers and seller agents that work with sellers. And of course, the 6% commission, when a home is sold, the buyer is paying the negotiated price. You know, maybe it's the asking price, maybe it's over the asking price, maybe it's under, but there's a contract price that happens. And buyers and sellers have a meeting of the minds, and there's, you know, bargain for exchange and all the classic contract elements, but that becomes a contract. And whatever that contract number is, as this thing goes through due diligence and then, you know, financing, contingency, and then it goes on to closing, and it closes on the day of closing, the selling broker gets a check, 6%, or whatever the number is, 6%. And then they have to pay the buying broker their percentage. And then the two brokers split the deal, the fee. And then the buyer gets the home and the seller has now sold their home and they move on to wherever they're going. And, you know, it's all happy, happy, happy. But the problem is that commission that is built in, and it's not really, it is negotiable, but it's not negotiable. I mean, if you wander from one place in the country to the next, the median is really somewhere around, you know, 6%, somewhere between 5% and 6%. It's just the way the industry has operated. And of course, the real estate people will say, hey, well, it costs us money. We have offices and we have computers and we got to run around and do all this stuff. And basically there's a justification for charging a fee. But the real problem is that a percentage fee is a percentage fee. And if a house is $100,000, it's one thing, but if a house is $1 million, the fee's 10 times more. And suddenly what the size of the fee starts to become eye-popping with respect to the value of the commission in the eyes of the seller and the buyer. Now, you know, this is sort of the chicken and the egg argument. Who is paying the commission? Well, you know, the home is sold and off the top comes the commission, but who paid it? Was it the seller that yielded some of their proceeds? Or, as we all know, the buyer's paying 100% of the price and financing it. So basically both buyer and seller are wrapped up in this cost. And as a result of that, as the value of homes increase and the commissions are getting bigger and bigger and bigger for the same amount of work, because it doesn't, you know, it's arguable. If you talk to a real estate agent, they'll say, oh, it's a lot more work selling a $20 million home than it is a $100,000 home. Well, maybe it is. Maybe you got to walk, you know, through more hallways, point out more bathrooms, you know. But at the end of the day, the perception, the public perception of this problem was that this is a monopoly and people are really, really, you know, the consumer. You're not seeing the Adam Smithian free market model happening. You're seeing a mechanism that is enriching the real estate brokerage agents at the expense of the buyers and seller. And that's why they brought this lawsuit. And it's not because they were completely happy with the mechanism. It's that they were really starting to think that there's a problem. So obviously the case is heard, the decision is out. And interestingly, there's a triple damages kind of situation. So the underlying damages were $1.8 billion. And then if you multiply by three, that starts to look like, you know, the better part of $6 billion. That's a lot of money. So what is going to happen is that I think this is a fundamental change in how real estate will transact. And it is going to lead to different models. And we've seen a lot of pressure from other companies. Like there are listing companies online. I'm not going to mention their names, but you know, you can find them quite easily. But you go to the site and it shows you everything that's listed and the history and who owned it and the taxes. And I think what happens is with technology and the interest in younger Americans or the comfort of younger Americans in dealing with buy-sell negotiated type platforms, that you're probably going to see a dramatic move away from an intermediary in the buy-sell or the sell-buy. I think the days of the real estate broker, I don't want to say they're numbered, but I think that there is more pressure on that industry structure now, $6 billion, than there has ever been. And I think what happens, given the propensity of younger people to use, you know, dating sites and you know, also, you know, all sorts of buy-sell sites and, you know, meetup sites and all these ability of going onto an online platform, communicating with others and coming to a meeting of the minds and affecting perhaps, you know, a contract or at least maybe a social engagement or whatever, that is probably the future of real estate, because it begs the question, if you're out shopping for homes and you can go on these online sites that are free now and you can, you know, you can look at homes, why call a real estate agent unless you need one? And, you know, some people are much more comfortable working through an agent as somebody who hold their hand than they are negotiating directly with a seller. I mean, think about how many homes in the United States are owned by corporations, private equity, foreign entities. it's starting to be, that's a lecture for a different day, but it's a real problem that, you know, you may be buying a home from some private equity group and their bargaining power is dramatically higher than yours because they're sophisticated finance people and all you want to do is buy a house. This story is not yet written. It is not. So the question is, how do the brokerage industry people, and keep in mind, these are all licensed by the states. I mean, you know, you don't just show up as a realtor one day. You got to take tests and there's all sorts of requirements and ethics things. And you know, you're licensed to perform this service. How do you step into that? Does that become more of an advisory role? And then how do you distinguish between an advisor in a real estate transaction who is a broker and an advisor in a real estate transaction who is a licensed attorney? That becomes an even bigger problem because that's a whole different lecture. That's another different lecture. But at the end of the day, the fundamental change is here, and it remains to be seen. Will clever lawyers step into the online platforms and provide, you know, legal services on a flat fee basis or who knows what? But I think it's something to watch. Because obviously, you know, when you look at housing today, and it's the craziest market, you know, you see 8% commission and 7.5%, excuse me, 8% interest rates on mortgages, 7.5% interest rates. It's very expensive to commit to buying a home. You need a bigger down payment, and down payments are hard to come by. And at the same time, the model, the national model used to match buyers and sellers, for better or worse, and I, you know, I'm not offering an opinion on whether the decision was right or wrong. I'm merely saying, you know, with a $1.8 billion judgment against you, they're going to have to figure out a different way to do this pretty quick. At the same time, interest rates are very high. The sale of real estate is very difficult to buy, to get into, and it's a lot of turmoil in the industry. And, you know, that's how technology moves the ball. I mean, if you look at how stocks were traded in the old days, whenever those were, you call, pick up your telephone and dial your stockbroker and buy, sell. And now everything is very digital and platformed. And, you know, this commission has just shrunk down to, you know, they're in some instances, they're minuscule. And that industry over decades has gone through a rather dramatic change, always pushing back toward that free market idea where the ability of buyers and sellers to effect a transaction in the cheapest possible way with multiple platforms providing a service really drove the cost of buying and selling stocks down rather dramatically. And I think today's, you know, or at least last week's decision is going to have that same type of an effect. So we'll see. It's hard to say, but it's something to think about. I did notice, you know, it was a story. I like to read the mainstream financial press to see what's all going on in the world. And of course, there's yet another report of a national celebrity was able to sell the celebrity sold a home that was owned on a nice island somewhere on the East Coast for like north of $20 million. And what was interesting about the story is that there are people who are buying these multi-$20+ million homes effectively for cash, for investment. And this is becoming a real thing. And it's in the stratosphere as far as pricing goes. I mean, the average American, you know, I was looking at a report today that 74% of American people, I don't say consumers, I don't like that word, but the American people are very worried about their personal financial situation, and 62% of them are living paycheck to paycheck right now. Well, that leaves out a lot of Americans. So when you're dealing in this rarefied real estate market where you're selling a home for, I think there's one on Long Island for $50+ million, and this one north of $20 million, what you're seeing is an interesting phenomenon that is affecting the American populace in ways that they really can't imagine. Quite often, especially in these higher priced real estate markets, people around the globe look to the United States real estate market as a safe haven for capital. And we know from the Argentine story, 133% interest rate. And I saw that in Turkey, there's over 100% inflation. And of course, Venezuela and you know, Zimbabwe and other places around the globe. It's kind of interesting to see inflation in other countries today. Everybody talks about the German situation in the 1920s. Well, that's ancient history. What we're really looking at is today. So if you're in Argentina today and you have a business or a big farm or you're wealthy and you're looking at super inflation, you want to be out of the peso and you want to find a place to park your wealth. And keep in mind, we tend to think of wealth as, you know, how many dollars do you have? You know, what's how many, you know, that's your balance sheet. What are the dollars? It's always dollar denominated. But if you live in an inflation ravished society and you're trying to take your buying power and move it, the one thing you want to do is move it outside of that currency and outside of that economic system. And this happens all over Latin America. So, and other places as well in Asia. I think a couple of years back, there was a real push as Hong Kong was struggling with respect to their government, which was granted under the British secession. When Great Britain gave Hong Kong back to the Chinese, they cut a deal for 50 years. We're going to do it the British way. The Chinese, they didn't think that was so good. So basically, they decided to change the model. And a lot of Hong Kong people who perceived themselves to be British fled to U.S. and Canada and tried to get their money with them. And of course, parking it in real estate has always been a safe haven. And it's all somewhat to that effect, the same way with Americans will go down to Panama or someplace and buy a condo. You're effectively moving some of your buying power outside of the system. And that's when what you're seeing in the United States is so many of these big deals on these expensive condos in New York and, you know, other glamorous places are cash deals by people from around the globe trying to get their money into a more stable environment. Well, that doesn't help the average American when money is flowing in like that. And these are cash deals, no 8% mortgage to worry about, and effectively a 6% commission or maybe a little less on a big deal like that is sort of a cost of doing business. You know, it's sort of an entrance fee to get in the door. Then it puts a lot of pressure on the regular Americans because it's a real supply and demand market. I mean, at the end of the day, Adam Smith always comes back to reality. I mean, that's the bedrock of how any economy works. You got people who want stuff and you have people who have stuff and they want to sell and there's transactions. Well, when the demand for housing is not just in our national income ball of, you know, of our GDP, but it's a global demand for assets in the United States. And frankly, they're somewhat limited. You pick your favorite island on the East Coast. There's only so many square feet of island. And at the end of the day, that puts a lot of pressure on pricing at the high ends. And it sort of has an effect of trickling down into the base of the economy. Now, I don't think somebody, you know, fleeing Argentina is going to be looking at a $300,000 house in the middle of Wisconsin, but you never know. I mean, it's just the kind of pressure that we face in these real estate markets. And that's why this case is very interesting, because as it fundamentally changes the way the service of matching buyer with seller in a real estate transaction, and, you know, most sellers and most buyers are comfortable to have a professional licensed person in the middle because they feel that there's some referee involved. You're not duking it out with the buyer and seller directly. There's always an intermediary, and that's a good thing. Gives a lot of people comfort. But the question is, how do you price that in a world where, you know, Americans are basically unhappy with the cost of the transaction cost. And there's so much money coming into the United States, not only in, you know, housing, condominiums, but also even in farmland, basically any type of land is seen as a safe haven globally. There's a lot of supply, there's limited supply and a lot of demand pressure, which continues to push the prices. And I think that's the biggest reason that buyers and sellers are reacting to the higher commissions, because you're competing globally with buyers for the United States. And as long as we allow people from around the world to come in and own fee simple absolute of the real estate titles, that's the situation we're in. So I guess this is something to be watching. We'll be talking about other news. There's jobs news this week. And of course, there's all sorts of other things going on. But I'm out of time for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. And appreciate your viewership here on WVW-TV and the Eastman Financial Report. Have a great afternoon. Bye.